Home. There's no place like home. Home sweet home. Wherever I lay my hat, that's home. I'm a homebody. I love Michael Bublé's song, Home. Been to Paris and Rome, but I want to go home. I guess I'm not the only one. Because home conjures up all these positive feelings, where you feel comfortable, where you feel at home, that has so many memories associated with it. It's not always where you live. My brother now lives in our family home that I grew up in Toowoomba, and it's always, I talk about going home, even though I don't live there anymore. My sister and I visited my grandparents' place in Bundaberg a few years ago, and that was a very home-like environment because it had a whole lot of positive memories for us. And as I said, I don't think I'm alone in that. We like to create an environment where we feel at home, where we create positive memories, where we can recall the different things that have gone on, positive and negative. It's quite complex. And if you saw the fires in Tanthra down in southern New South Wales, you saw the tragedy of that, not just because of they lost a weatherboard house, because they lost their homes. They lost the memories that were associated with that. And sometimes when we haven't got that in life, when we yearn for something else, there's a real sense of wanting to be in a place where we can feel at home, where we feel comfortable, where we can create positive memories. And for some of us, it's a real struggle to create that type of place. We try to do it as a church, where you feel comfortable, where there's positive memories. And we'll try to do things. We might even spruce up the place from time to time with a coat of paint or redecorate this, put things on the door because it says to people, we're expecting you. Visitors that come for the first time, we made preparations for this to be your home. And in our personal home, we want people to feel welcome as well. But as I said, it's a yearning that many people just can't quite grasp. As we've done our previous series, Finding Your Way Back to God, the first awakening we looked at was this awakening to longing, that there's this longing deep down inside of us that we try to fulfill with other things. And a lot of times people have that and just pursue it in the wrong direction. I've been thinking a lot about this type of concept and how people have this longing for home or a place to belong. I came across this C.S. Lewis quote. He says this, "Creatures are not born with desires unless satisfaction for those desires exist. A baby feels hunger. Well, there is such a thing as food. A duckling desires to swim. Well, there is such a thing as water." So all those things that we feel, that this desire for something, C.S. Lewis says in his argument that if these desires exist, there must be a way of fulfilling these desires somewhere. And when he talks then about this desire for a place to belong, a home, he says this, "If I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. If none of my earthly pleasures satisfy, it does not prove that the universe is a fraud. Probably earthly pleasures were never meant to satisfy it, but to arouse it, to suggest the real thing." And C.S. Lewis says, if we are designed for something else, then earthly pleasures are never going to satisfy the heavenly desires that God has built within us. We want something more. We want to really be at home eternally. Wouldn't it be great to go through life knowing that we have that, instead of having these happiness buckets that are full of holes that we can never be satisfied? We're always looking for something else. Lewis says that the holes can't be plugged this side of heaven. And you know, Jesus addresses these desires. as he talks with his disciples in that passage that we're going to look at today. And I hope and pray for you that this idea of who Jesus is, that he calls himself the way, the truth, and the life, would come into clearer focus for you, that you would understand what he's saying when he says this, and how it relates to this desire to be at home, that we try to create in our own environments on earth, but ultimately only is able to be fulfilled with a heavenly reality. And so I want to look at the way, the truth, and the life as it relates to the Easter story. As we celebrate Palm Sunday today, Good Friday on Friday, and then Easter Sunday. So John 14, 1-6, Jesus says this. Don't let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God and trust also in me. There is more than enough room in my Father's home. If this were not so, would I have told you that I'm going to prepare a place for you? And when everything is ready, I'll come back and get you, so that you will always be with me where I am. And you know the way to where I'm going. No, we don't know, Lord, Thomas said. We have got no idea where you're going, so how can we know the way? Jesus told him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me. As Paul said, over these three Easter services, today, Friday, and Sunday, we'll look at way and truth and life. So Jesus starts up in verse 1 and says, don't let your hearts be troubled. And whenever you start a sentence like that when you're talking to someone, if you're saying don't do this, then you're saying that because you expect that they will be once you say what you're going to say. Is that right? If you start a sentence saying, don't be upset, but, because you know that probably what you're going to say next is going to upset that person. Don't be mad at me, but this is what I did. Because you know what you say is going to make them mad. So when Jesus said, don't let your hearts be troubled, he knows they're troubled. And if I was one of the disciples, I'd, with respect to Jesus, I'd be saying, Jesus, that's easy for you to say. You seem to live on another plane to us. And you don't want our hearts to be troubled with what's going on? Jesus, that would happen if we didn't have any trouble, okay? My heart wouldn't be troubled about things if there was no trouble to be troubled about. So if you could make it that there'd be no trouble, that would be easy for my heart not to be troubled. But later on, just a couple of chapters later, as John records Jesus talking, he says, I have told you these things that in me you may have peace, but in this world you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world. So even if that's what they were thinking, Jesus, if you could take away the trouble, my heart would not be troubled. Later on, Jesus says, in this world you will have trouble. So that's not going to happen. So the disciples have got to work out some way of not being troubled in the midst of trouble. Now, the thing that seemed to be troubling the most was Jesus was going away. In the time leading up to this, it's the same sort of night, Jesus had celebrated the Passover feast with them. They'd had it together. They'd done what we call now the Last Supper, that has morphed into what we celebrated this morning, the Lord's Supper. They ate the bread and Jesus gave it new meaning from the Passover to say, this is my body. They drank a cup of wine together, said, this is my blood. And that was really significant for them to do that. He washed their feet. And then he throws out this thing, oh, by the way, I'm going away. I'll only be with you a little bit longer. And that's what was troubling. I mean, they had left everything to follow. They'd been following probably all up 3 years, full-time, 18 months. I mean, left businesses, left succession plans because your son did, what your father did, and they'd left all of that to follow Jesus, and they were just getting it. You could see just glimpses of them getting it. And Jesus said, I'm going away, I won't be with you much longer. And that's troubling. That's troubling. But Jesus said, don't let your heart be troubled. You trust God, trust in me as well. And he said some things there that I think are really significant as I've researched this passage. He said some things that are trigger words. He said things like, I'm going away, I'm going to prepare a place for you, I'll come back and get you to be with me. Now, when we hear these words, we tend to think, and the way we interpret, is that he's going to heaven. He's going to build a mansion for us and that'll be great. But I don't think that's what the disciples would have thought immediately, because certain phrases in there are trigger words. There are certain trigger words that if you know what he's talking about, you know. If you don't, you interpret somewhere else. So if I said to you, jousting sticks, tell him he's dreaming, how much are you asking? Some people think I'm crazy, and a lot of others know I'm talking about the castle. So there's certain trigger words that you know, if you know what they really mean, that's what the disciples would have interpreted. And for Jesus to say things like, I'm going away, I'm going to prepare a place for you, I'll come back, I believe they only had one thing in mind. A tradition, a certain phase of life that they would have known about totally. And they're only thinking one thing. A wedding. An engagement. It doesn't read it for us, but for people in those days, the whole engagement or betrothal, they would have called it in those days, that's the steps that would have taken place. Betrothal ceremonies were the first step in the celebration of a Jewish wedding. A couple would be going out, they'd be dating, probably not in the sense that our couples these days do that. And once the groom decided, yes, he wanted to marry the bride, he would approach the father. They would set a price to be paid of what it would cost her, the bride price, the dowry we call it, or the mohar in those days. And once the set amount was agreed on, it would be paid in full. Then they would have a ceremony, like an engagement party that we would call it, which included a very important part, was drinking of the cup together. And the bride-to-be and the groom-to-be would drink the cup, and that would be a really significant part of that. That was really the defining symbol of the existence of a marriage relationship that was to be, much like the engagement ring is for us today. And once that ceremony would be over with the drinking of the cup, the groom would announce, and now I'm going away to prepare a place for you. My father's house has many rooms. Now, of course, in those days, they didn't have the mansions like we do today, and you couldn't just go down to Bunnings or Home Timber and Hardware and get whatever supplies you need to build that. It would just be whenever it happened. And there would be other jobs to do. And so the bride would have this unknown time where the groom would go away and just put another room on the house. Because families lived in those days pretty much intergenerational. There was aunts and uncles and parents and grandparents and kids. And they would just sort of add another room onto the house. And when he was ready, he would come back with great fanfare, and Jesus told another parable about this. But this was the sort of imagery that Jesus is using as he's telling his disciples that he's going away. Now, for the bride in those days, it gave her a great deal of certainty because a price was paid, an agreement was entered into publicly with the drinking of the cup, and the groom-to-be announces, I will come back, I've paid the price, I've entered the agreement, I don't know when, but I will come back and get you, and you will be with me forever. And so Jesus is really, I think, trying to portray to them the security and the certainty of what is happening in his going away and his coming back. And of course, that's what happened. The night or the same night that he's saying this, he has just shared a cup together. He didn't say it was a marriage thing, but that sharing of the cup together. He said, this is another covenant. This is a new covenant. This is a new agreement that we make together. We know later on he would die on the cross, and as the writers and the early Christians worked out what that was, it was paying the price for our sins. And Jesus is saying to the disciples, I will go away, but I will come back. I've paid the price, I've entered the agreement, and I'm coming back. And I'm not sure if the disciples had really got this, because Jesus always adds something else. You know, if it was just that, they might have got it. But in verse 4, he just adds this one more thing. And you know where I'm going. Okay? You know where I'm going. And they go, you know, Thomas was always doubting things. I guess he could have, you know, tried to pull the wool over Jesus' eyes. Yes, we know. We know the way. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about, Jesus. But you tell us what you're thinking of the way, and then I'll work out if that's what I was thinking, and we agree. But he didn't say that. He was just honest and said, no clue. I have no idea what you just said. But out of that is when Jesus says those wonderful words, I am the way and the truth and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me. First thing to note in this passage is that the I is very emphatic. It's as strong as you can get in the Greek. It's saying I, me, and no one else. There's no one else that is these three things: the way and the truth and the life. And way, you know, I'm just trying to find ways of trying to express what Jesus meant by this. Way often means, you know, the direction. I'm going such and such. Which way are you going? So we know sort of what direction. Way can mean a way of life. The type of life that you lead if it wants to get to a certain destination. And this idea of Jesus being the way, it must have been so taken on by the early church, the early Christians that were followers of Jesus. In the early church, they didn't call themselves the early church. They didn't even call themselves Christians until someone had a nickname for them as Christ followers, Christians, and that one stuck. What they called themselves was followers of the way. We read in the book of Acts, when Paul is having this persecution, Bonnie and I and a few others went to see the Paul movie. Really, some great Christian movies out at the moment. Do that over Easter. And here they are in this little community in Rome, and they're calling themselves the Way. This is from Acts 9. This is Paul, or Saul as he was known then. He requested letters addressed to the synagogues in Damascus asking for cooperation in the arrest of any followers of the Way he found there. He wanted to bring them, both men and women, back to Jerusalem in chains. So that idea of Jesus being the Way was just something that so grabbed the attention of those early Christians, and I guess the disciples who heard Jesus say this must have passed that on. They just called themselves followers of the way. And so Jesus saying, I am the way. No one comes to the Father except through me. That's where I'm going. I'm going home. I'm going home where my Father is, and I'm building a place for you so that you can be at home. And I am that way. I'm the only way that you're going to get there. And it's really interesting, again, for Jesus to say, I am the way. It's like one of us saying, I am the motorway. I am the Cunningham Highway. I am the M1. I am the centenary, you know. What does that mean? I'm blocked up in the morning and in the evening, you know. It's saying, I am the road. I am the path that gets you there. I am the method. I am the means of getting you home. Do you want to find a place that's really home? Do you want to have your eternal desires satisfied? I know you're upset that I'm going now, but I'm going to be the one that gets you home. You can be with me You can be with my Father in heaven, and I am that way. And he's also personalizing that concept. It's not just, you listen to my words because my words have got the way. He's not even saying that, although obviously he's said that with his words. It's more than that. He's personalizing it. He's personifying the message. It's not that I have a way, or I know the way, or I'll show you the way. It's I am the way. I am the way that you're going to get there. And those desires we have about being home or creating a place that feels at home, and the gap of why we don't feel that way more often is our sin. Not more of something or less of some sort of trouble in our lives. It's our sin. And those statements really summarized everything that Jesus had been trying to say in his 3 years of ministry, that the miracles that he performed, the sermons that he preached, the parables that he told, were all about getting this concept, I am the way. There is a God who loves you, there is a God who's preparing eternity for you, and this life is a test of 60 or 70 or 80 or 50 or 30 years, whatever it will be. And there is a way, the only way. And some people think it's exclusive. Why is there only one way? Well, why is there a way at all with our sin? But Jesus said, I've created a way and I am that way. And by virtue of having a sinless life that he lived, he would take the sin punishment to pay the price that in that engagement metaphor they would have got. Jesus would become the highway, the way that we can approach God. This is how much he loves us. This is how merciful he is. In Romans, Paul interprets it and says this, no one can ever be made right with God by doing what the law commands. The law simply shows us how sinful we are. So if you think you're going to get to heaven, if you think the way for you is just going to be to live a good life, that's not good enough. Sorry, but you're not that good. The law just points out how bad you are. That was the downfall of the law. It could point out what was wrong. It couldn't help us to do it right. It could point out what was right and wrong, but it couldn't actually forgive us when we've done wrong. And no one is capable of being right in God's sight by obeying the law, because we're not that good. But Paul says in verse 21, but now God has shown us a way, a new way, to be made right with him without keeping the requirements of the law, because we couldn't do it anyway. As was promised in the writings of Moses and the prophets long ago, we are made right with God by placing our faith in Jesus Christ. And this is true for everyone who believes, no matter who we are. Christian family, doesn't matter. Way away from God, doesn't matter. No matter who we are, placing our faith in Jesus, trusting him rather than by our own good deeds, is that way. And Jesus is the way. As we've been saying, today is Palm Sunday. And Palm Sunday is that day we commemorate where that week leading up to this event, Jesus came into Jerusalem triumphant. People waving palm fronds and shouting Hosanna. And it's always challenging for me just to see what happens in that week, that Jesus in the beginning of the week, the crowds are for him. And by the end of the week, they're baying for his blood. Beginning of the week, they're praising him. At the end of the week, they're calling for him to be crucified. What changed so quickly? I'll look at this in a bit more detail on Friday, but they had an agenda. Those crowds had an idea of what Jesus would do for them. And when Jesus says, "I am the way," he is saying, "I am the way. Now you have a way, you have your own ways. And your job is to come into my way, not invite me into yours." To follow Jesus is to follow his way, not invite him to do what we want and bless the way of life that we want. And in accepting Jesus, we have to change our ways in order to join him on his way, not be set in our ways and never change. And ultimately, that's what the crowds want. They thought if Jesus comes in, he will take on the Romans. He will defeat them in the way that we want. And when he didn't do that, they turned against him. And I've just seen people over the years turn against Jesus because suddenly he doesn't do for them what they want. There's no submission to his way and his ways. We want him to do what we want for him, for us. But he is the only way. And instead of submitting, letting him rule our lives, follow his ways, a lot of us aren't prepared to do that. But he is the only way. He is the only way we're going to find that home where those eternal desires will be satisfied. Great writer from the 15th century, I think he was, Thomas A. Kempis, said this: "Without the way, there is no going. Without the truth, there is no knowing. Without the life, there is no living." And over these next three services, today and Friday and Sunday, we'll look at the way, the truth, and the life. What would it be like to live with the security of knowing that we are on the way and we are his way? I want to look at a video from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in the United States. Eddie McGuire, of course, hosted it here. There's a guy called Regis Philbin who hosted it in America. This guy, John Carpenter, is on, and John had promised his wife a trip to Paris if he'd won. And he's got to the final question. Got $500,000. If he loses, he goes back, he gets $32,000, but he's going to go for the million-dollar question. This is what happens.
You're ready? Let's go for the million. Which of these U.S. presidents appeared on the television series Laugh-In? Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford.
I like to call my parents right now.
Sure.
Use my lifeline, call my parents.
What are their names?
My father. I'll talk to my father.
Does
Tom.
He have a name? Tom.
He does have a name, yes. Tom.
All right. Our friends at AT&T will get your dad on the line, and we'll see if he can help you.
Hello?
Hello, Tom.
Yes.
Hi, Regis Philbin here from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Hi.
We've got your son, John, with us right now. He's doing pretty well.
Good.
He's won $500,000.
Wow.
And he's going for $1,000,000. And he needs your help to get there.
Okay.
So he's going to come on the line, read a question, four possible answers. One of them is the right answer. And the next voice you hear will be John's. John, you've got 30 seconds. Starts right now.
Hi, Dad.
Hi.
I don't really need your help, but I just wanted to let you know that I'm going to win the $1,000,000. Because the U.S. president appeared on Laugh-In as Richard Nixon, that's my final answer.
Well, my gosh. What can I say except, Debbie, you're going to Paris, and this is the final answer heard all around the world. He's won $1,000,000.
If you look that up on YouTube again, have a have a look at it again, because you can tell as soon as the question is read, he knows the answer. And he just spent the rest of that time in total confidence, knowing that when the time ran out, he would get what he wanted. Imagine living a life like that, not for 60 seconds, but for 60 years, knowing that when your time runs out, you've got the answer, because Jesus is the way and he is your security. And no matter what happens on this earth, it doesn't matter, because when the time runs out, you know what you will get at the end. And that will hope to help you cope with the lack of security that you'll have on this earth. That you'll get a safety and security in the times in this earth that it won't be safe and secure. But it'll help you cope with that, because you know when the time runs out, you will get home. And Jesus will come back and take you where he is. Imagine living a whole life like that, of that confidence, knowing that you are with Jesus, you put all your weight on him, and he is the way, and he will lead you home. Because it's not only just about in the sweet by and by and in the future. I really believe it will help us cope with all the things that we have to cope with before the time runs out. And we'll live life with confidence, and we will cope with the things that we have to cope with, because we put everything on Jesus, because he is the way. And I love it that you know this Easter season, a new confidence if you don't have that, or renewed confidence if you have that, that you're able to this season really grab the confidence that Jesus is trying to give you in what he says, what he said to the disciples, and what he's saying to us. I've entered the covenant, I've paid the price, I'm going to prepare a place, and I will come back. You have that security when you trust Jesus. Let's pray. Father, thank you for those.